Well, good morning and welcome to the Wayne Eddy Affair on your radio station. This is the one, 95.1 FM, and it's September, celebrating 50 years in the Northfield community. This is a Wednesday. It is June, and it's the 27th day of June, and the year is 2018. A little bit overcast out there, anticipating some rain. Got a little bit of flooding going on in some parts of Minnesota. And this coming weekend, it is going to be torturous. It's going to be in the 90s and humid. I give all this information because maybe 10, 20, 30, 40 years from now, somebody will be listening to this particular interview, and I'd like to let them know what it was like the day I have a chance to talk to Lieutenant Colonel Brian Bornick from Northfield, Minnesota. Brian, thank you very much for joining me this morning.
Thanks for having me, Wayne.
It's going to be an interesting 2 hours, and I had the opportunity of meeting you at one of the graduation parties here in Northfield, Minnesota, up in a beautiful neighborhood. You live in that neighborhood, don't you?
Close to it.
Okay.
Yeah, I live near the hospital in Northfield.
So. Oh, near the hospital. Oh, yeah. Way out there?
Yeah, up on the north side, yeah.
Really? Is it a condominium? Or?
No, it's on Cannon Valley Drive.
Yeah.
It's that Liberty Park kind of development.
Okay.
So they're all individual homes.
And that's kind of like what I think maybe we sometimes refer to as Wang's Woods out in that area.
Yeah.
Yeah, going way back. A little bit of Dwayne Eddy called Rebel Rouser, my theme song for this Wednesday morning. And I had the opportunity to meet Brian and his wife. And I learned that, Brian, you served in the United States Army and you rose to the rank of Lieutenant Colonel.
That's correct.
That's pretty good. Well, when I met you, there were a couple of kids, and I'm talking tiny kids, and a boy and a girl that were twins, or are twins, I should say. And I'm looking at you, and I'm going, well, he's a young man. And then I'm looking at you, and I'm thinking, well, you got to be a lieutenant colonel. You have kids late in life for some people.
I do. I think my life is really, in many ways, a story of two lives.
And so, what's your oldest child?
My oldest child,
how old?
Kylie, is 24.
24, and your youngest?
Twins just turned one.
That's going to keep you young, my friend.
Oh, I hope so.
Yeah. And I was interested in having you stop by our studios today because there's been a lot of news in the last several years in reference to veterans. They're becoming more revered and more honored, and there have been veterans that are surviving from the Second World War, the Korean War, the Vietnam War, and the conflict in 91, and all the way up to what's going on right now. And you happen to be not only a veteran of the United States Army, and ranked as a lieutenant colonel, but you also work for the Minnesota, or the Veterans Affairs? What's the name of that?
The Department of Veterans Affairs.
Okay. And that's located where?
It's right near the airport, right off of 55 in Hiawatha.
I know where that is. And so now, when you say that, should I be thinking that you work inside of a hospital and you're an administrator?
Well, no. Actually, I work in information technology. So I handle servers, computers, networks, telephone systems, all the communication, voice and data communication for the Minneapolis area VA. And so it's not just a hospital, although I do take care of all of the IT needs in the hospital. It's also the Henry Whipple Federal Building has the Veterans Benefits Administration, so the VBA portion. I support them. The National Cemetery at Fort Snelling, I support them. And then there's a few other organizations. There's a franchise fund debt management center that helps veterans with if they have debt problems or if they want to improve their credit scores. There's counseling. There's just functions available to them that they help with. And enterprise education services to help not only the internal employees of the Veterans Administration, but also veterans learn, maybe reclassify, reskill. A lot of veterans they'll go overseas, and because of injuries, maybe amputations or traumatic brain injuries or whatever, the skills that they possessed prior to their deployment aren't really applicable when they come back. And so the VA does a really good job of helping them retrain, whether it's tools and equipment or whether it's education. So there's just a lot of really good programs around, and I'm blessed every day to be able to go into work and help a fellow veteran, a brother or sister in arms, that, you know, really can benefit from what the VA has to offer.
So if I were to visualize you going to work, would I picture you going into an office, maybe even a cubicle, is that, that's mm-hmm. the word I want, and sitting down in front of a computer and then getting a request from the various agencies you just mentioned and saying, we're having a problem getting this prescription up because of whatever, and you can go in there and fix all of these different servers for the computer use.
Yeah, that's pretty applicable.
Boy, that is. Where did you learn that, in the Army?
I didn't, actually. So, again, going back to the story of two lives, I have my military career and I have my civilian or private sector career. I started with the VA 2.5 years ago. Prior to that, I worked in IT for local companies like Target or United Health Group and others around. And so I really kind of kept them separate. My first 11, 12 years in the Army, I was actually a combat engineer and worked on, in placing and removing obstacles like minefields or concertina wire, or just being able to fix and deny area to the enemy, as well as, of course, I'm going back a long time.
So. Well, we're going to do that. We're going to go all the way back. And for those of you that want to know, well, this Brian Bornick, what's the deal there? So, well, you, what month were you born?
February.
And what day?
17th.
Okay, so March, April, May, June, July, August, September. So you are 7 months and 1 week older than KYMN Radio. We went on the air in 1968.
Okay.
So you're going to – oh, you did. You turned 50.
I did.
How'd that feel?
50 felt a lot better than 40.
Yeah, I think I'd have to agree with that.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't have a problem with 30. No. And 40, oh, my goodness, you know. Well, I'm so old that I remember a television show when I was a child, and my relatives, my grandma and grandpa and all that, they all watched a show called Life Begins at 40.
Yeah.
And I never, at the time, I didn't understand what that meant, you know. And now, of course, you look back.
Yeah.
And that, I wonder if that show could be revived so I could watch it in a way that I associate with it. But, Brian, you served our country, and you've married somebody that also has a career or had a career in, 20-year career, I believe.
20-year, yeah.
Both you and her served 20 years?
I served almost 25.
Okay. And then she is, you were a lieutenant colonel, and was she a rank?
Yeah, she retired. She was medically retired at 20 years. Her last deployment, she was in some pretty tough situations and was injured pretty bad. So she ended up being medically retired after 20 years of service, but she was a nurse and a psychological operations officer in the Army. And now we're blessed. She is able to stay home with our little ones.
Yeah.
Those
right.
1-year-old twins, as well as a 3-year-old daughter and a 5-year-old son. So
wow.
Our house is busy.
Does the 24-year-old live there, or were
no.
he's off and running?
The 24-year-old lives in Woodbury.
Okay.
Now. And I have a 22-year-old daughter as well.
She's
in December, she graduated from UW-River Falls with her undergraduate degree, and she's in her master's program right mm-hmm. now. And I have a 17-year-old son who his mom and I both live in Northfield, and so he splits time between the homes.
Okay. Wow. This is, what do they call it, melding? Or,
yeah.
Or there's some name for that, blending.
Yeah, we are definitely a blended family.
Yeah. Wow. I'm going to have to write some of the names down later on. Is it too personal for me to ask, you mentioned that your wife suffered an injury. Was it a physical injury, like a grenade or something like that?
Well, it was actually a helicopter crash.
So, oh.
She deployed to Iraq 2 times in support of Operation Iraqi Freedom, and the second time around, She was in a helicopter crash which had some orthopedic injuries. Her knee was pretty messed up. She's undergone several surgeries to actually help repair that. And in January, there wasn't any more repair left, so they actually had to replace the knee entirely.
Oh.
So at 42 years old, she has a titanium knee.
And two kids.
Well,
babies.
I kid her. I tell her our one-year-old twins are jealous of her knee because her knee's newer than theirs. But,
yeah, okay.
But no, she's a, okay. She's an incredible woman. So.
Yeah, I had the pleasure of chit-chatting with her for quite a while. And we were at Jason Lemke's home.
That's correct.
For the graduation of their daughter, Tina and Jason.
Yep.
I had never been up in that neighborhood before. It's wow! I couldn't believe how many homes there are.
Yeah, there's a lot. Northfield has definitely built up over the years.
When I first came here, there were no stop and go lights, and that's a fact. And they in 1968, you know, they take a poll every 10 years,
right.
And in 1970, they said you must introduce the college students as part of your population. Which, of course, is beneficial in regards to aid from the federal government, mm-hmm. For example. But I believe the population of Northfield was between right around 6,000. And then they added the students, and now we've doubled our size since I've been around.
Yeah.
And it's been fun watching the town grow, and sad to see the retailers get beat up by the big boxes.
Yeah.
And watch the Burnsville Center come in, watch the Mall of America come in, and the big boxes. So that's my own lament, and I won't carry it on any further. So I like to go all the way back to where were you born, who was mom and dad, do you remember grandma and grandpa? And
sure.
It's just fun to do that and bring back some pleasant memories for you,
yeah.
And then learn about your service to the country and how what it was like to get your very first salute. I always ask officers that because they don't forget. You know, the one I had on yesterday, he had just gotten his commission in the Navy, and those that were new in the Navy, I don't know what the name is, but they had their swords, and he was walking by, and they all presented a sword to him, and he's looking like, what's this? And he goes, oh, that's right, I'm an officer, and he gave his first salute, so we'll talk about that as we get there. Brian Bornick is my guest here on KYMN Radio. He and his family live right here in town on the southeast side of our community, out behind, no, wait a minute, I got you mixed up from where the party was.
Yeah.
Okay, you live out on the north side of town. You're in Dakota County?
Yeah, we're just across the line, so we're in Dakota County.
So when you vote, you know, you get to vote for Dakota County commissioners, but not Rice County.
That's correct.
But you vote in Northfield, do you recall?
Is it
a church that's in Dakota County?
Yeah, last time we voted, it was north in Dakota. So.
Okay. So I'm going to have a fellow that used to be a Dakota County commissioner for many, many years and a former Minnesota Viking and who was inducted into the Hall of Fame and has a record for interceptions in the NFL. And his name is Paul Krause, and he has a man cave in Webster.
Oh, really?
And I asked him, I did an interview with him, part one, and I said, we got to get that part two. Well, it's been Jeff's run into him and others, and when are we going to get this done? So he said, why don't we do a remote from my man cave? So we're working on that. That would be a lot of fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
And he's got a very interesting career. At 9:16, I want to remind people that the Quarterback Club here in Northfield is open for breakfast right up until 10 o'clock, which they are, Monday through Saturday. And, of course, you can get anything you want from a cup of coffee and a donut to bacon and eggs and hash browns and pancakes and waffles and sausage and bacon and on and on and on. And then, of course, at 11 o'clock, they start getting lunches ready, and they have everything from soup and pita sandwiches, egg salad sandwiches, roasted chicken. Their menu is very extensive, and it's locally owned and locally managed. And a lot of young people get their very first job at the quarterback club, just like Dale Finger, the fellow that owns it now, got his first job there, and then after college, went back to work and bought it from the late Larry Benjamin. So I'm pretty proud of that. They don't know whether they're 50 years old or 50 years old. Did they start in the fall of 67, or how was that? So anyhow, they've been around for 50 years. My guest this morning, Brian Bornick. Do you call yourself retired as a lieutenant colonel?
Correct.
Okay. And so where were you born?
I was born, Portage, Wisconsin, actually, which is probably about 25, 30 miles north of Madison, the capital. And I lived 50 miles north of there in a little town called Montello, Wisconsin.
Montello, okay. Montello. And is that by the Wisconsin Dells?
It is. It's about 30 miles east of Wisconsin Dells.
Okay.
Highway 23 runs right between Wisconsin Dells and Montello. So it was the perfect place to have summer jobs when you got to be a teenager.
Yeah. I worked in Tomo, Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. You know that.
I do.
Is where the I divides.
Yep.
And I used to go down to the Wisconsin Dells racetrack. Did you ever go out there to the races?
Oh, yeah. We saw the races, the Tommy Bartlett Ski, Sky, and Stage Show. I worked there 4 summers, so the only thing I didn't do is drive the boats. So I've seen it all. I've visited it all. We saw the circus trains used to come into Baraboo and Wisconsin Dells and used to just drive out there and watch the trains go by.
Well, did you were you in a position to get tips?
Well, yes.
T-I-P-S,
yes.
You know, money?
Yeah. Yeah, there were so the ducks, they would tip. You know, you give them a lot of the history, and you talk about how the Dells kind of started, where it got started, how it kind of evolved into what it was. And, of course, well, that's going back into the early 80s, so it's evolved even since then. I mean, two summers ago, I took my kids back there for a week, and it doesn't necessarily even look like it did then.
I know. I was there 50 years ago. So did you were you one of the guys that were in the duck boat? On the microphone?
I was.
Oh, okay. Well, tell us a little bit of history about that you can remember.
Oh, boy.
Because we used to have, I don't think we do now, we used to have packages for people that we had a show called the Big Kim Auction Man Show, and people would bid on these packages, mm-hmm. and they were tickets for the duck boat and tickets for this and tickets for that. And I was kind of like thinking, well, you know, I don't know how well this is going to go. Let's say it was worth $50, and we'd auction them off and, you know, get $20 or they went up to like $40 that people would give for them. And I didn't realize how many people will travel down to Wisconsin Dells to spend several days or a week.
Oh, yeah.
I was there about 3 years ago. And they have a casino just down the road.
Yeah.
So the kids and the wife, you know, enjoyed the Dells. And I, But give me some history about, I did do the duck boat, and, you know, I don't recall a whole bunch of information, but I do remember befriending American natives mm-hmm. that worked at the Dells and put on shows. And today that wouldn't be politically correct, although it's an art and a culture. Did you have that opportunity to witness all of these things? What best impressed you the most? And I'll shut up and listen.
I did, and I won't go into too much detail because I'm sure I'd do it a disservice with my memory the way that it is now. I mean, after all, I'm 50. So,
okay.
But I remember there's a couple of highlights. Yes, I did actually get to witness and participate in many of the tribal cultural events. Many of them were around music and dance. So they put on a lot of shows, especially at night. There'd be a lot of kind of fire baton twirling and dancing, and it was really a tribute to the heritage. I didn't find out until later in life that I'm actually I have Native American in me. I think that was a long kept secret for a long time because Wisconsin has gone back and forth with, you know, their relations, I think, with Native Americans, and gladly it's significantly improved. But it was really, for me, I was almost drawn to it. When I worked there, I would find myself in spare time or being able to try and I played a lot of baseball, so I tried to work a lot of hours in the summer so that the rest of the year I could focus on playing baseball. And so I would just pick up odd jobs, or I would help out, or I would set up and tear down or do anything just to be kind of part of that cultural experience.
So were you ever asked to don the garment of the culture and help at least have another person on stage that they could look at the beautiful?
No, I'm not really blessed with rhythm. So
no.
I think having me on stage would be a detriment.
I can tell you didn't use the rhythm method.
That's pretty true.
American Native that I befriended was about my age, and he invited me down to the shows. And then after the shows, we'd go back to his residence. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we were young guys, single. And, you know, we would party. And I was just unbelievable, the places where they lived.
Sure.
I mean, it was like shanty town with trailers, if you will. And I couldn't, you know, all this beauty and all this pageantry. And then you go and...
Yeah,
it was kind of a surprise to me.
One of the things I'd learned early, I mean, as a young teenager, 13, 14, 15 years old, you know, the culture really focused on kind of core values. They were committed to family. They were committed to their heritage. But, yeah, there wasn't a lot of big, flashy houses. They didn't drive, you know, fancy new cars. But the community was very tight-knit, and it was... well, the extended community was like a family. It reminded me a lot of the town I grew up in. It was just under 1,000 people when I was there, which meant that I had about 400 sets of parents. And usually...
in Montello.
Yeah, in Montello. And my parents would know something that I did before I got home. So,
You know, there was or is a little bit of that here in Northfield. If people know who you are and then they know who their kids are.
Mm-hmm.
I remember one time I asked my daughter, there's a place up by, which is now the Witt Center. It mm-hmm. used to be the high school, then it became the middle school. And there's a concrete wall on the corner house up on, I think it's Union. And somebody had wrote Smoky Point using a spray can.
Yeah.
And the kids would, junior high, well, senior high at the time, too, would sneak out. Go across the street and smoke.
Sure.
And I asked my daughter, I says, so when did you start smoking? Well, I don't smoke. Well, yes, you do. No, I don't. I said, well, you were on Smoky Point and people saw you there. I hate it. Everybody knows you, and I can't get away with it.
Yeah.
So I know your feeling there in Montello. If you just tuned in, thank you. Brian Bornick is my guest here this morning. He works with the Veterans Administration. He's an IT guy, which it calls IT stands for intelligent
information technologies.
Okay, well, intelligent has to be in there someplace. Boy, it's incomprehensible to me. And he's a retired lieutenant colonel and lives here in Northfield with a whole bunch of kids and a beautiful wife, I might add. And so you're born in Montello, town of...
1,000 people.
1,000 people. And what did your dad and mom do for a living in Montello, Wisconsin?
So my dad worked for the County Highway Department there, Marquette County Highway Department, for 37 years and retired from there. So the entire time that I grew up as a kid and into my college years, that's where he worked. And my mom was... she stayed at home. She raised my sister and I, just the two kids.
What's your sister's name?
Mitzi.
Is Mitzi older or younger than you?
She's 4 years younger than I am.
Okay, so you were the big brother.
I was the big brother.
And I have to say I love the name Mitzi.
Yeah.
I remember Mitzi from my high school years, and she's 4 years younger than you.
Correct.
Okay?
Yeah, and so my mom did some daycare and took care of us as we were growing up, and then when my sister got into probably fourth or fifth grade. My mom took a job as an executive assistant to the administrator of a nursing home that was built in our small town. And over the course of the next 7 or 8 years, she kind of took classes and got some credentials and became the administrator of that nursing home later. So,
good example for you.
Yeah, yeah. So we, you know, I mean, it was the 70s, and I didn't know. We didn't have a lot of money. I mean, working for the county was, I think my dad worked there almost 30 years before he made $20,000 a year. So,
yeah, but, comparatively speaking, people that work for a local, county, state, or federal job, they get nice benefits, job protection.
Correct.
And stand on, you know, with the shovel in your hand.
Lean against it at the side of the road.
But now, if your dad was working the maintenance for the county, and you called it Marquette County?
Marquette County.
Did you have an opportunity to go out snow plowing with them?
I did,
That had to be a big thrill.
And actually, one summer I did a there's a lot of construction that happens, obviously, you know, in the summer. This part of the country, we say there's two seasons, right? Winter and road construction.
First time you hear that, that's funny.
Yeah, after that, it's not funny anymore.
I laughed.
But I actually got an opportunity to work for the county highway department and drive dump truck for a while for a summer and help out with that. So that was actually, I look back on it and it was one of my most fun jobs, I think, you know, part time.
Well, I had a picture of you standing on a highway holding a sign saying slow and stop. Did you ever have one of those jobs?
No, I didn't have to do that. I actually was behind the wheel. So.
Okay. Which, maybe the pay would have been better, number one. And number two, standing in the hot sun, slow and stop. Back in those days, they didn't wear all the hard hats and they didn't wear the
orange vests.
My goodness, it certainly would be boring. And if it's a hot day, it could be miserable. Well, now, of course, they have rules and regulations and they have walkie-talkies and it goes much smoother. But how did I know that if your dad worked for the county that you got a job with the county and got to ride around? A little nepotism.
Nepotism,
huh? So what about on your dad's side? By the way, that area that you lived in had some great rivers and some wilderness. Was your dad a hunter?
Before I was born, he was a hunter. Him and his cousin would actually do a fair amount of hunting. But about 2 years, I think, year and a half or so before I was born, my dad was deer hunting one day. There was a lot of farms. In fact, when I was 11, 12 years old, I started working with family and friends on farms. So there was a lot of hunting land, a lot of cropland, a lot of woods, a lot of hunting land. And so he was on public land. But it started to get a little bit more populous and a lot more people were out there. And one day he went out, he was deer hunting, and about 9 o'clock in the morning, he told me the story a few times, but about 9 o'clock in the morning, really wasn't much going on, so he sat down and took his thermos out and poured himself a cup of coffee, and right about that time, a deer ran across the field, and a shot rang out, and the bullet hit the tree that my dad was leaning up against about 10 feet above his head, and so he dumped out his cup of coffee and put it back on his thermos, walked out of the woods, and never hunted again.
Yeah, scary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but then when I was 12, I was kind of a farmer's hand with a good friends of ours. They own some land, and he said, listen, if you want to help me cut wood and stack it so that we've got wood for the winter, you can hunt with us. And so at 12, I started hunting with them, and I hunted all the way through college with them, and it was great. I love to primarily, I don't hunt anything that I wouldn't eat the meat for, because that's just me. I just don't want to waste anything, and it's not about it's more about the experience than it is anything else. So I deer hunt, bow and gun hunt, and about 12-13 years ago I picked up turkey hunting, and that's incredible. I love turkey hunting, so those are the three that I do.
That's become very popular.
It has.
And I've mentioned before on the air that my daughter once said, hey, Dad, there's some turkeys in the yard. And we live out south of town in a wooded area. And I said, yeah. And no, really, come look. And Okay, and I went and went, I had never seen wild turkey before. And now I see them all over the place all the time. But there's some people that really, well, we have a show coming on every other Saturday. It's called Northfield Outdoors with Dave Vistendahl. And he had a big story on there one time about turkey hunting and how thrilling it was.
It is.
And I had a friend from Wisconsin over in Prescott, Wisconsin.
Sure.
He was really into turkey hunting. And you eat them then?
Yes.
If you get them, a bunch of BBs in them?
Well, if you're a good shot and you aim for the neck like you're supposed to, then there's not so many BBs in the meat.
They're not as good as domestic turkeys, are they?
I personally like them. They're it's more dark meat. There isn't as much white meat as domestic turkeys. So it's kind of a juicier meat.
Oh, I'll have to kill one this fall.
I'll share.
Okay, that'd be a good idea. 9:32 on the Wayne Eddy Affair on KYMN Radio out of Northfield, Minnesota. We'll be back in a flash with some more information about my guest this morning, Brian Bornick, who lives on the north side of Northfield.
Leo South in Lakeville is not your typical power sports company. It's family-owned and run, meaning you actually get to talk to the owners. What's even more impressive is they have 25-plus employees, and they all work every hour they're open, so you don't have to stand in long lines waiting for help. Plus, get faster and more coordinated service. And getting parts, well, there's so much experience behind the parts counter, you'll be amazed. Our motto is we sell fun, but every day our mission is to help you from finding parts, getting service, or shopping for something new and fun too. Visit leosouth.com to tempt yourself.
The genuine enthusiasm for helping people get fit is palpable at CrossFit Scopos in Dundas. Every coach brings their expertise along with their desire to help you be the best you can be. This is Terry Knight, and I've worked out in a lot of gyms and on my own, but the atmosphere provided at CrossFit Scopos in Dundas is nothing like I've ever experienced. I'm challenged and lifted up. I hope you'll take a moment to check them out and let Scopos help you change your life. Go to CrossFitScopos.com.
We're back, live and in color on the Wayne Eddy Affair. Good morning, everybody. I have a guest named Brian Bornick from Montello, Wisconsin in studio. This was the eighth most popular song in 1986. Can you name that tune?
Well, I can name the artist. It's Prince.
Prince and the Revolution.
Prince and the Revolution. It's not Purple Rain.
No, Purple Rain. There's a group by the same name as this song that paint their faces.
Be my girl, you don't have to be cool. What? To rule my world.
Yeah, talking to the mic.
Sorry, my wife will be able to tell you in a heartbeat, but... Oh, Kiss.
Yeah. You got her. Okay, we'll give you a half on that one.
You know, the funny thing about that, I should have got your clue, because the very first concert in my life I ever saw was Kiss Alive.
That had to be fun.
It was.
Was it Madison?
It was.
Okay. Yeah, I can't believe some of those guys are still going.
Yeah.
Gene Simmons, his name is.
Yeah.
Boy, is he self-centered. If anybody ever calls me egotistical, say... Look at Gene Simmons, but he's very successful, so got to take it. 9:35 on KYMN Radio, Brian Bornick. My guests right now, we're just kind of scattering here in reference to a chronological story about his life. So we do know that your mom ended up being an administrator in a senior citizen home or whatever you call it, and that your dad retired as a county employee, and that you had one little sister, Mitzi.
Correct.
And... what about Grandpa on the Bornick side, your dad's grandpa?
So my dad's mom, Grandma, passed away 2 years before I was born.
Okay.
And my grandpa lived until I was almost three.
Okay.
So my earliest childhood memory is actually way back. One of the fun toys to play with was a dart gun, the old suction cup. You know, you stick it in and shoot it. And so I remember sitting on my parents' bed in their bedroom with my grandpa, and we would lick the dart and shoot it against the wall, and it would make all kinds of little ring circles on the wall.
And he didn't care.
He loved it, and my mom was not so happy.
Yep. Okay, so do you have a history of the Bornick name that you can say, oh, well, they came from? And
yeah, so my dad's cousin, also named Wayne Bornick.
Great name.
He spent about 30 years kind of doing a family chronology and history. And so we stem back primarily in England and Germany. Although my time in the service, when I would go overseas, there was a little different spelling, but very popular in like the Eastern Europe, Czech Republic, and other areas, similar naming. So none of that came up in the chronology, but the more Wayne dug, the more we found. So I'm sure there's probably more there.
There's a big king back there somewhere, huh?
Yeah, maybe.
What was your mom's maiden name?
Jordan.
And where did the, did you know your grandma, grandpa Jordan?
I knew my mom's mom. My mom's dad. My mom was the youngest of nine children.
Wow.
And her dad actually died when she was a young girl. So her mom, my grandma, remarried to Henry Walters. And so I knew Henry Walters, kind of, I guess, step-grandpa, for about 6 years. My mom's mom lived to be into her 90s. So I have memories of her all the way through probably early teens.
Okay. Now, you had a lot of aunts and uncles then.
I did.
And a lot of cousins?
Oh, yeah, a lot of cousins. When my mom's mom, my grandmother passed away, I think she had 57 grandchildren and great-grandchildren.
Holy cow. So, that must have been a big funeral.
There were a lot of people. And recently, about 4 or 5 years ago, that side of the family actually started kind of an annual reunion just to get all the cousins and, you know, survivors still together on an annual basis. So that's pretty
neat. Have you gone?
I have. I've been able to go 2 of the last 4 years.
Nice.
We had actually this last weekend was the reunion. My mom was born and lived in Packwaukee, Wisconsin, which was about 8 miles away from Montello. Packwaukee went to the Montello School District. And they have that in Packwaukee. And this year, last weekend, actually, we had the twins' first birthday party. So I missed it this year. But last year I was there.
When you were there last year, how many do you think showed up? And how did you distinguish who was the kids of the aunts and the uncles and what cousins had kids?
Yeah, so the kids part is hard.
Yeah.
So there were probably about 40 or 50 people who were there 2 years ago when I was there, and all of my cousins, all my aunts and uncles, they haven't really changed that much. Maybe the hair's gotten a little thinner or a little grayer, but they're easy to pick out.
It's fun, isn't it?
It's their kids and their grandkids that maybe I haven't seen as frequently. That's hard to tell. So you find out, you know, conversation starts with, hi, how are you, and who do you belong to?
Yep. I ran into a lady, I guess it would be, and they came up with a brilliant idea, and I'm sure it's been used, but every family wore a different color T-shirt. So when you saw green, you know that was my cousin Mert's great-grandchild or whatever. And red was the Newmans. And if we ever do it again, and we've got a whole bunch of second and third cousins, it would be fun to just know by the color of their T-shirt what lineage they have.
Sure, yeah.
20 minutes before 10 o'clock on the Wayne Eddy Affair, my guest this morning is Brian Bornick from Montello, Wisconsin, originally, and he is a retired Army guy, lieutenant colonel, and his wife retired as a lieutenant, second Louis, if I
captain.
Remember. Oh, she was a captain?
She was a captain. So she started out in the enlisted ranks and actually turned down a promotion to Sergeant First Class, or E7, in order to get her commission. So she had a lot of years of experience and kind of that backbone leadership experience as a non-commissioned officer before getting her commission. And she reminds me of that frequently because I did not have that non-commissioned experience.
Yeah, because you went in as a second Louis.
I did.
Yeah, okay. So she was like the... My the way I look at military is through the Army and ranking, and she would have been like the Master Sergeant.
So Sergeant First Class is E7, and then Master Sergeant is E8.
Oh.
And so she was two steps away from that when she decided to go to the officer corps and get her commission as a second lieutenant and then work up to be a captain.
Okay. And she was Army also.
She was Army,
As a matter of fact, you met in the Army, didn't you?
We did. Fort Bragg, North Carolina.
Fort Bragg, and you're bragging about it. We'll be right back.
Millstream Commons Assisted Living is where the all-star seniors enjoy life in Northfield. From the delicious meals, the bright, spacious apartments, the volunteer projects, the bus trips we take, classes we attend, and the music we enjoy, there's something for everyone. At Millstream Commons, we treat everyone like an MVP. For more information, call 507-650-0141.
Walk like an Egyptian.
Amen. Number two in all of 1986.
Wow. Probably one of the first songs that had its own dance, too.
Yeah, and you know who I think of when I hear this song? Steve Martin.
Yeah, Saturday Night Live skit.
Can you name who sang it?
Mangold.
Yeah! Wow, good. I guess that little high school in Montello wasn't... you know, out there in the middle of nowhere, huh?
Well, we were maybe behind, but we weren't under a rock.
Did you listen to stations from Madison?
We did, yeah. Z104 was the popular kind of what they would call pop station now. So.
Like the KDWB.
Right, exactly.
It is 17 minutes before 10 o'clock on KYMN Radio. The Wayne Eddie Affair. Brian Bornick is my guest here this morning. He and his wife and children live on the north side of Northfield, and they are not here from here originally. We'll find out how they ended up in Northfield, but we're still back in Montello as this young man was growing up, helping some relatives on the farm, working at the Wisconsin Dells, working for the county as his father did for 37 years, and didn't get a chance to know grandparents very well. So how did the Bornick family celebrate Christmas?
Well, Christmas was actually kind of a big deal growing up. We did the same thing as, well, every year, as far back as I can remember. We would kind of bake cookies during the day and get ready for church that night. Church would usually start about 9 o'clock, and we would do candlelight service. After candlelight service, we would go. My dad's older sister, Aunt Mavis, and her husband, Uncle Jim, lived three doors down from us, and so we would go to candlelight service at church, and then we would come back to Aunt Mavis and Uncle Jim's house, and they would have a gathering of really Uncle Jim's side of the family, punch, cake, cookies, and hang out. And as a kid, it was great. Uncle Jim had a pool table in his basement, and so we would play pool, and I get to see people that I didn't necessarily see too much throughout the year, and the time just kind of got away. Well, what I found out later was that's when my mom and dad would sneak home and get everything set up
ready. That's cool.
Right? So they'd make sure that Santa Claus had visited the house, and then they would come back when everything was set, and then kind of things would, you know... end at Mavis Uncle Jim's, and then we would walk home, and the presents would all be under the tree, and we'd open presents, and Mavis Uncle Jim would come over, and then we had this tradition. My Uncle Jim owned a snack bar, Jimmy Snack Bar, in downtown Montello, and he had this secret family recipe for making what we call them barbecues, but like sloppy joes. And so we would make that, and we would open our presents, and then we would have kind of like a midnight meal. And then, you know, kids play with their toys a little while, and then we'd go to bed and, you know, wake up and start it all, because then it was Christmas vacation, and we would play with those Christmas toys all week.
But, you know, isn't it great to think of those things, the pleasant moments in your life? And when you say you walked home from Uncle Jim's, I'm trying to think of a town the size of Montello. Were the houses several feet apart, or were they 2-acre lots, or what was that?
No, it's a lot like Northfield. It was, maybe 120 to 200 feet of, lawn space.
Okay.
Sidewalk down the side.
Okay.
So, it was three houses down. It was probably a minute and a half or 2-minute walk.
Okay. So, was it like post-World War II housing?
Yeah. Building? Yeah. I grew up in the same house that my dad grew up in. So.
Oh, so it wasn't. It was built before.
Yeah, it was actually the house that we grew up in was built in 1902.
1902. How many floors?
Two floors and a basement.
How'd you heat it?
Well, initially, right, up until I was probably 11, 12 years old, it was an old fuel oil tank that we would have filled up and burn fuel oil.
Boy, I'll tell you, that stinks, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it can.
You ever make the mistake on turning it up too high?
Oh, I was never, yes, I snuck, but I was never allowed to touch that thermostat.
Oh, man. When I was living in Tomo, Wisconsin, we got lived in the upper part of a duplex and with the stove right in the middle of this very successful broadcaster, I assume he's retired now, he was really cold, and we had just gotten in on a winter day, and he said, let's turn that heat up, and we did, and then forgot about it, and all of a sudden it just was toasty.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
Holy cow, you couldn't believe how hot it got. It was dangerous.
Yeah.
So, we're going to now get through, was the school system where you went K through 12 in one building?
Well, actually, when I started, it was K through 8 in one building, and then high school was a separate building.
Okay.
My grandfather, my dad's dad, actually was the maintenance guy for the school for many years. He has to get up like 4 o'clock in the morning and shovel the coal into the coal burning furnace to heat the high school.
Yeah. He work there when you were going to school?
He did not.
Okay. I was going to say that'd be, hi, Uncle.
Yeah, would have been cool.
So, anything in one K through eight that stands out in your memory? Teachers, did you move class to class or have one teacher for the entire first grade, second grade?
Kindergarten through fourth grade, we had one teacher. Stayed the same classroom, just rotate subjects. And then in fifth grade, we started rotating. Fifth grade, it was one class that you rotated. So if your homeroom happened to be the math teacher, you probably rotated for social studies.
Okay.
By the time you hit, we had junior high, so we didn't have middle school. Junior high was seventh and eighth grade.
Okay.
That was every course had a different teacher. You rotated classes. That kind of prepped you for high school.
And, of course, seventh and eighth grade, holy cow, a lot of people would say I'd never want to have to be a teacher for those hormones that are going crazy that. How many were in your graduating class of high school?
Well, Marquette County is one of the more economically depressed counties in the state of Wisconsin. And so, I mentioned, you either worked for the city or county government, you owned your own business, or you farmed. That was pretty much it in my community. So as a freshman, when I started, there were 98 kids in my class, one of the largest classes in a long time in Montello. But when I graduated, there were 49.
What's the story behind that?
Well, a lot of kids came in. It was kind of a... if you got a job there, you moved there, and if the job changed or you got a different job, you moved out. And so we had a lot of people who moved away, but we also had a lot of kids who dropped out of high school at 16 to work on the family farm.
Oh, okay.
So
let's take you into high school. Was it a cultural change that was obvious? I mean, when you were in the seventh and eighth grade, did you look up to these people? You're in the same building, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you saw them, and they were big and cool and all that stuff, and had the team sports. So when you were in the seventh and eighth grade, could you just not wait to be a high school guy?
Well, in Montello, I think junior high was its own rite of passage, and so it's almost like as a seventh grader, you were kind of a freshman, and you waited to get to eighth grade. So I think you wished away seventh grade to get to eighth grade so that you could be the big class in junior high.
Yeah.
And then you did freshman all over again.
Yeah.
And, of course, back in the in the dark ages when I was a high schooler, there was still initiation and things like that.
Really?
So, oh, yeah. I remember plenty of times where the stairs were hard stairs, kind of concrete stairs going up in our high school, but the floors were carpeted to keep the – this high school was three levels. So to keep the noise down in the hallways, they carpeted the floors. And I remember pushing pennies with my nose along that carpet floor, getting rug burns on the nose there. So, but, yeah, I remember your freshman. And then after a freshman – see, the thing about Montello being such a small school, I started playing – organized sports when I was 5 years old in, you know, Little League, basically baseball in the summers. So a lot of these kids, we played together. So it wasn't like I didn't know them. I'd known them by the time I got to high school for 4 or 5 years on different sports teams. So it was kind of like they were extended brothers and sisters for the most part.
What other harassment did they create for? I mean, the worst thing that happened at the high school I went to, one of them, was cutting hair and not whipped cream, but shaving cream, sure. Spraying people with that. But pushing a penny with your nose can be, like you say, rug burns. Did they do anything else?
Well, I think the biggest thing, if I go back, it was... I mean, none of it was really malicious, so that's different. I wouldn't classify it as bullying, so to speak. It was just kind of a rite of passage. But I remember football as a freshman on the football team during homecoming week. Things got kind of a little wild and crazy, and of course you got pumpkins you're getting ready for Halloween. Pumpkins are on the floats. You're doing all this stuff as a class, and I remember we had to. Freshmen on the football team, we had to put our helmets on backwards and do a little dance. And as we, you know, because the back of the helmet comes down, you can't really see anything, so you're kind of blind. And they took all the inside seeds of the pumpkin and stuck it down our pants, and we had to dance around in that. So that was, it was a little humiliating, but it washed off in the shower.
So your freshman year, were you in a advanced athlete and get to play with the juniors and seniors?
I was.
In any of the sports?
Yeah, well, as a freshman in high school, I started on the baseball team. I played JV on the basketball team. And we had a kind of a freshman JV combination team on the football team, and I played that freshman. But then as a sophomore, I started on all the varsity sports.
Okay. My guest is Brian Bornick. He and his wife live on the north side of Northfield. He's a retired lieutenant colonel, and he is employed with the VA as an IT guy. V-A-I-T.
Yeah. Lots of acronyms in IT.
Yeah. And we have him in high school. We're going to take a final break this hour, and we will be back and learn about his high school years in Montello, Wisconsin.
Affordable living could be yours at Northfield Manor. Located on the campus of the Northfield Retirement Community, the Manor offers HUD-supported one-bedroom apartments for seniors age 62 and older, or for persons with a disability. If your annual income is less than $43,750 per year, you could qualify. Northfield Manor tenants enjoy all the amenities that the Northfield Retirement Community Campus has to offer. For more information, call 507-650-7332 today. Northfield Retirement Community. Innovation. Choice. Tradition.
You thought you could make a midnight run to the store for a loaf of bread. What you got was a minor fender bender instead. I'm State Farm Agent Mark Quinnell in Northfield, and I know that accidents can happen anytime. That's why we give you 24-hour good neighbor service, so night or day, help is just a phone call away. For your insurance and financial needs, phone me, State Farm Agent Mark Quinnell, at 645-4545.
Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
You never know who's going to show up on St. Paul's front porch. Tonight it's the Big Doll Gang. Isn't that adorable? Little Tommy is going to shoot off some bottle rockets. Bet he doesn't know they're illegal in Minnesota. Be careful, Tommy. Don't shoot your eye out.
Saints baseball tonight at 7:05 with the annual toilet paper drive presented by Innovative Office Solutions. Join the craziest tailgate party of the year on Walzer Wednesday.
fun is good at CHS Field, St. Paul's front porch, and home of Saints baseball.
Hey, if you and someone you know would like to go to the game tonight, I have some free tickets to the Saints games at CHS Field. All you have to do is give us a call at 645-5695, and whoever answers the phone, tell them, hey, Wayne just said on the radio I could have some free Saints tickets. I have up to four of them. Just give us a call at Kim, a friend you can't count on. Oh, one of my favorite bands. You know it already?
I don't.
Number five in Number all of five. 1986.
Had some fun.
I can see his face.
Yes, we had our ups and downs. Been down that rocky road. But here we
can't remember the band name. Drawing a blank, man. Sorry.
I am happy to be stuck with you.
Stuck with you.
I can't remember the
Huey Lewis.
Huey Lewis in the News.
I could see his face. I just couldn't remember the name.
Yeah, don't you hate that?
The only name that kept coming into my head was Kenny Loggins, and I knew that was wrong.
Oh, gosh, no. There's a big difference. I like Huey Lewis. And the News, 2.5 minutes before the news, here on KYMN Radio, the Wayne Eddy Affair. Brian Bornick's my guest this morning. He's a newcomer to Northfield, basically speaking, and he works for the VA. He's a retired lieutenant colonel of the United States Army. And he is the father of, we'll figure that out later, a bunch of kids. And let's get you into high school now. Once you got through your freshman year, not hazing so much, but the teasing and initiation, you got to participate in basketball, baseball, football, anything else, track?
No, those were, I ran track in junior high, but in high school, the sports conflicted, and the WIA pretty much had you kind of, if you played one sport, that's the sport you played. So those were the three primary ones that I played in high school.
Okay. So tell me, did you have any other activities other than sports, band or choir or class president anything?
From fifth grade through my sophomore year of high school, I played in the band. I played trumpet and saxophone. Student government. I was selected to go to Badger Boys State my junior year. So that was a great experience, and I learned a lot. Student council, just various things. Homecoming committees, yearbook.
So leadership roles.
Correct.
Yeah, and you ultimately ended up.
Ultimately, I did.
Yeah. So it's smart to start young.
I think so.
Yeah. Did your father teach you those leadership skills, or your mom?
Yeah, I think a lot of my work ethic, my integrity. One of the things I remember my dad said was, nobody can ever take your integrity. You can only give it away. So guard it close, and that stuck with me a long time. I grew up in a primarily farming rural community, and I remember working on the farms where the farmers would make, tens of thousands and even hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of deal with a handshake. It wasn't a contract. It wasn't, lawyers weren't involved. Their handshake was kind of their bond.
Yep.
And so that's always stuck with me, and that's how I try to live my life.
Well, we're going to find out more about your life after the news coming up next on KYMN Radio. Retired Lieutenant Colonel Brian Bornick, my guest on KYMN 1080 AM, and now the 195.1 FM from Northfield, Minnesota. It is 10 o'clock.
Officer charged, judges demand. I'm John Trout. Officer Michael Rossfeld, the East Pittsburgh police officer who fatally shot 17-year-old Antoine Rose Jr., has been charged with criminal homicide. Reaction from the teen's family through their attorney.
This is a small stride toward justice. We have a very long road ahead.
There's Athena Jones. Protesters are calling for an independent investigation of that police shooting. Rose was unarmed when he was gunned down. State Representative Ed Gainey.
If you're not disciplining one of your own, particularly when a guy gets shot in the back three times, if you're not willing to discipline one of your own, then at the end of the day, how can we trust what you won't discipline?
A federal judge in California demands the U.S. government take action on the southern border. Jim Roop has more on the ruling.
First, the separation of parents from their kids who enter the country illegally must stop. Secondly, kids under five must be reunited with their parents within 14 days, kids over five within 30 days. Also, parents must be allowed to talk with their kids by phone within 10 days if they're not already in contact with them. Now, the judge in the order called the situation at the border chaos and a crisis of the government's own making.
Tuesday primary upset. New York Representative Joe Crowley, who's been considered a possible replacement for leader Nancy Pelosi, lost his re-election bid to liberal activist Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
We won because we organized. We won because I think we had a very clear winning message, and we took that message to doors that had never been knocked on before.
The FBI agent who sent anti-Trump text messages, Peter Strzok, has arrived on Capitol Hill. Correspondent Manu Raju is there.
This is the first time that Peter Strzok is coming before any committee in Congress. A number of Republican chairmen of key committees have been eager to talk to Peter Strzok in light of the thousands of text messages that he did exchange with that former FBI attorney, Lisa Page, with whom he was having an extramarital affair with.
Strzok will be testifying in closed-door meetings with two House committees today. I'm John Trout.
When I get older, losing my head, many years from now, will you still be sending me a Valentine? Birthday greetings, bottle of wine. If I'd been out till quarter to three, would you lock the door? Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Wayne Eddy Affair. I'm Kim, a friend you can count on. Overcast today is 27th day of June. The year's 2018, and we are talking with Brian Bornick, and maybe some years in the future, some of his children or grandchildren will be listening to this interview and know all about Brian. We have you in high school right now in Montello, Wisconsin. And you were a leader already. You were retired from the Army as a lieutenant colonel, but by the fact that you were in band and the student council and homecoming committee, and let's talk about sports for a while, all right? What was your favorite sport? Which one?
Oh, baseball, beyond a doubt.
And what position did you play?
All of them. My baseball career started when I was 5 years old, and I started playing in Little League. And I kind of started at second base. I loved the infield. I kind of loved the action. There was a lot of, depending on the batter and the situation, there was a lot of change. But then throughout the years, and as teams needed different things, I remember 3-4 years later, I was about 10, 11, we didn't have any outfielders. And you can't really, I mean, you need all nine players to actually play the game. So I was blessed with a little bit of quickness and speed. And so, you know, the coach said, hey, I think you'd be good in center field. You want to give it a shot? So, yeah, it was a little foreign. The infield's a lot different than the outfield. And so I said, I'll give it a shot. And I remember the first practice, he was hitting fly balls out there, and I wasn't very good at judging it. So I got together with some of the dads in the neighborhood, some of my other friends, and, you know, just practiced and practiced and practiced until I could get good at it. And then so that year I played center field. Next year I was at shortstop. I bounced around. In high school, I played varsity as a freshman, so I started at second base. And then I had a good year, got some good recognition through the conference in the state. And so then my coach moved me over to shortstop. I played shortstop. that year and the next year, and had a great year, my junior year. And by the way, as I was developing in this sport, and progressing through high school, my whole goal was to go to college to play baseball and then go to the major leagues. And so, had a great year, good recognition, had some scouts looking. So as a senior, I was thinking I'm just going to put the exclamation point on this and make it a done deal at shortstop. And that summer between our junior and senior year, our catcher moved away. And so we practiced for 3 weeks getting ready for the spring season. We were 3 days away from our first game, and we didn't have a catcher. And so the coach basically came to the team and said, guys, listen, it's fine and dandy that everybody's got their positions picked out, but if we don't have a catcher, we're not taking the field. And nobody wanted to catch. So as a senior, I said, I'd rather play baseball than stick at shortstop and not play baseball. So I transitioned to catcher, and I did the same thing. I'd get out there an hour and a half before practice, and the coach would set up the pitching machine, and he'd skip balls off the infield and off the plate, and I'd learn how to block it, and I just got as good as I could at that position. Turns out it paid off, I guess. It worked pretty well, and I did a lot of catching and utility play in college. I did play.
So I want to keep you in high school.
Okay, in high school. So I won't jump ahead.
Okay, so people that are regular listeners to the Wayne Eddy Affair know my next question, and that is, what one play will you never forget in baseball that you were involved in or even not involved in? Just a play that in baseball when you were at Montello High School.
So there's, I think in every sport, there's certain things that are kind of that holy grail.
Yeah, that's right? Why I ask.
And so for me, I remember I was playing American Legion baseball. I was 16 years old, and we were in a tournament. The team that was hands down picked to win the tournament, we were playing in 3 games away from the championship. So this was the elimination game. And I remember nobody gave us a chance to beat this team.
And you're playing catcher.
And, well, at this point, actually, on the American Legion team, I'm playing center field.
Okay.
And so it was the sixth inning. This is the third time that this batter had been up in the game.
Is this a seven-inning game?
It is. Okay. Yeah, it's a seven-inning game. And we were down by one run. And this player had lined up the middle the past two times. So I knew the pitcher that we had. I knew the batter. So I kind of cheated in. And it was a gamble because if he got a hold of one and it went over my head, the game was out of reach. But I remember he lined right over the shortstop's head, but I had played in. There were runners on first and second base, and when he connected with that, they took off. Nobody was out, and they really wanted to win the game. And so I caught that on a line drive.
That's threw it one out.
Threw it to second base.
Two outs.
And he threw it to first base, and
three
so we
outs.
Got the Holy Grail triple play.
Wow. Gosh. Isn't that a great memory?
It is. It's
well,
one that I've
never
forgotten, and it was a great feeling.
At 8 minutes after 10 o'clock, Brian Bornick is my guest. Okay, Brian, you also played basketball and football. Let's hear the basketball play you'll never forget.
Okay, so the night of my 16th birthday, we were actually playing a game against our conference rivals.
In February,
February 17th, 1984.
Okay.
The game was tied, and there were 7 seconds to go. And
what position were you playing?
Well, I was kind of a I was a guard, but more of a kind of like a, I don't know what they call it now, but shooting guard, kind of on the wing.
Okay.
And so we had the ball. There were 7 seconds to go in the game. Game was tied. The worst we could do, as long as we didn't turn the ball over, was go to overtime. And so we called a timeout. Coach put up an inbounds play. And I got the pass. I turned away from the basket and dribbled. So I was probably halfway between the half-court line and the top of the key. And I just launched it up. And as the ball's in the air, the buzzer goes off, game's over. Everybody figures we're going to overtime. And it was nothing but net.
Oh, wow.
So we won the game on the last shot.
And everybody hugged you and jumped up and
they
down.
They did. It was pretty, but it was short-lived.
Yeah. Okay, so that was the sport that I enjoy more is football. I admire basketball, but it's so fast. It's so fast, and it seems like there's so many timeouts and crazy. Baseball, kind of, sit back, have a beer, and eat some popcorn, and, there's a hit. But anyhow, and I enjoy it. Well, the ones I enjoyed most were the World Series of 87 and 91.
Yeah, of course.
You really get into that. So what about football? What position did you play in football?
Well, in football, I was I played every snap except for kickoff. So I was the kickoff return guy. On offense, I was a wide receiver. On defense, I was either a safety or a cornerback. And I think that's primarily because of the speed that I had. I was relatively fast. I wasn't a very big kid in high school. I mean, as a senior, I was probably 145 pounds. So I had to be fast. Otherwise, I was going to get creamed.
Did you like offense or defense better, wide receiver or safety or whatever?
I liked them both. I liked them both because as a wide receiver, the plays that I was involved in most were really those quick hits where you could make something happen or those long.
Become a running back.
Yeah. And then on defense, you could actually lay the hit. So
there you go.
I liked both sides of the ball. Yeah. I really did.
Well, what's that one play you'll never forget in football?
Football was probably the one that I had to work the hardest at. I wasn't as naturally gifted. And so I remember we had my best friend who lived four houses down from me on the other side of my Aunt Mavis and Uncle Jim. We would practice together all the time in the backyard, always throwing the football around. And we had worked on this one play. It was just a quick three-step drop and let it go. We called it a 60 streak. And I would basically put a move on the cornerback that was guarding me and then just take off straight down the field. And so it was all timing. And I remember we called that. We were about 50-yard line, 48-yard line, close to midfield.
Now, this buddy of yours was a quarterback?
He was, okay. Yeah, Steve Johnson. He was the quarterback. And it was just like we had practiced it all summer long. It was just incredible. But, I took off. I did my move, and I had beat him by about a step. And Steve had already taken his three steps back, and he just launched the ball. And so the ball was already two-thirds of the way to me by the time I turned around to look for it. And he laid it perfect right there on my fingertips. And I thought, when you can draw up a play, no matter what sport it is, but you can draw up a play and then actually execute it just like it looks with the X's and the O's on the board, that's the play right there.
And did you score?
I did. That was a touchdown.
Okay. Did you win the game?
No, we lost the game.
Okay.
But it was close.
Okay. And did he call it in the huddle? Or
he did. It was actually, he changed the play. So it was an audible.
So what did the coach think of that?
He thought it was pretty good. Steve actually happened to be the coach's son, so okay. He got a little leeway in a while.
Well, I've heard of coaches saying, they score, but the coach comes up and say, what the hell did you do? I told you to do this.
Yeah.
And you being a retired lieutenant colonel must have had experiences like that.
Well, there are, but sometimes you got to make the audibles,
right?
That's why you don't want robots or automatons. You want thinkers, and as leaders, you appreciate that.
Well, what did you ever accomplish your teams, conference titles or state tournaments or state championships?
Yeah, so in baseball, we got into state playoffs 3 out of the 4 years that I was there, but we never won it. In the semifinals, we lost. My senior year, we lost to the team that won the state tournament in the semifinals, and I actually went on the pitcher who pitched that game. We played college ball together at University of Wisconsin Stevens Point, but basketball we did. My junior year, we won the conference championship, and we made it all the way to Madison, where we played the state tournament. But we lost our first game there, so we didn't win the state tournament.
Did you go to a class reunion 2 years ago?
No, actually, this is kind of a sad thing, but my class has only had one class reunion since we graduated. In 32 years. That happened to be our 10-year class reunion, and it was the same weekend that my sister got married. So Guess where I was.
Yeah. And how many did you say graduated from Montello?
49.
And you started with 90-some.
96.
96 and almost in half. Wow.
Yeah.
10:15 on 1080 Radio, KYMN, Northfield. You're listening to the Wayne Eddy Affair. Brian Bornick is my guest this morning, a retired lieutenant colonel now working for the Veterans Administration as an IT guide, a guy. And we'll get into that a little bit later on. But he is from Montello, Wisconsin, which is near Portage, Wisconsin, which is near the Wisconsin Dells. Get that all right?
You got it right.
All right. So now, being a good a baseball player and a so-so basketball player and football player, did you have aspirations? Were you recruited? Did you want to go to Big Ten? What was your thoughts and what were the school's culture in regards to going on to college?
Yeah, so probably a small class, you know, 40-some kids. There's probably about 20 of those kids that went on to college. And, you know, our guidance counselor didn't necessarily push college for everybody. He took the approach of some people were inclined to go to college and he wanted to help them. I came from a family that nobody in my family had gone to college before. I was going to be the first one. My parents really pushed hard for that. My dad was, I remember one of the things that he said over and over and over again, which I didn't really understand until I was older, is I want better for you than I had or that I did. And, you know, I graduated second in my class, salutatorian. Now, granted, it wasn't a big class, but so I got some academic scholarships. The local community gave scholarships to for academic performance as well as citizenship.
Do you remember what they were?
Well, the Rotary Club, I got a scholarship from. The American Legion, I got a scholarship from. There was the Mel Laird Youth Leadership Scholarship.
Mel Laird.
Mel Laird was a politician. He was a U.S. congressman or senator from the state of Wisconsin for many years. I think he was in the state government as well, maybe lieutenant governor. And so the college that I chose, originally my aspirations growing up was I wanted to go play baseball for the Arizona State University Sun Devils.
Why?
Well, they were always in the College World Series then. They were a great team. I love their colors. It was just, I don't know. You know what?
And Arizona sounded cool.
Arizona did sound cool, and it was a long ways from Montello.
Yes. That's one of the major reasons.
And I did get some scouts, some scholarship offers. They were partial scholarship offers, and they were, you know, contingent on making the team, but none of them were Arizona. So I thought, well, if I'm going to, you know, kind of start out, I'll go someplace where I know I can start. I know I can play as a freshman. At this point, I had started varsity in high school all 4 years, and I wasn't really keen on riding the bench. And of course, in my mind, I was destined for the pros, so I wanted to play. And so as I kind of searched through, I didn't necessarily know what I wanted to go to college for, but the University of Wisconsin, Stevens Point, was about 60 miles away. A couple of my friends were going there. They had a pretty good, I mean, probably in that conference, the best baseball team at the time was University of Wisconsin Oshkosh. But in my hometown, everybody has nicknames, I guess, and they call that UW Zero because it was old Oshkosh.
Okay. Well, like River Falls is Moo U.
Moo U, right.
Yeah.
So I chose Stevens Point, and I did. I was able to play there, and it was fun. And my thoughts at the time were I'll go there for a year, kind of prove myself, get some college experience under my belt, and then I'll transfer. Well, then the reality of the financial situation of college kind of came into play. And so I never did transfer, but I did graduate from Stevens Point and played ball there, played a little kind of semi-pro ball the last couple of summers there. I played in Appleton for the Timber Rattlers. And so I don't have any regrets.
Now, tonight, the Northfield Knights are playing at the Sector Field at 7:30, and the Dundas Dukes are playing in Dundas. At 7:30. And Channel 9 is going to be their videotaping because they're highlighting communities that have baseball teams. Okay. Have you connected with either the Northfield Knights or the Dundas Dukes with your love of baseball?
Well, yeah, we actually, I'm locally here, Post 84, American Legion, Northfield Post here. We do the Legion baseball team, and as vice commander here for this post, we support that pretty extensively, actually. So I've connected there, but prior to moving to Northfield, I actually played for the Hampton Cardinals for a number of years. So I've played
Hampton, right?
Yeah,
up here?
right up the street.
Really?
So, yeah.
Where were you living?
At the time, I was living in Farmington.
Okay. Was this the Cannon Valley League?
It is. Yep.
Yeah. And I used to go watch that those games in the Cannon Falls Comets, I think they were called.
Mm.
You can correct me if I'm wrong.
I don't remember if they were the Comets, but we did play in Cannon Falls. That's a beautiful park in Cannon Falls.
I have a story that I'm going to tell, and you'll know his name because he has a statue at the Dundas Dukes ballpark.
Okay.
Lou is his first name. Do you know who I mean?
Well, I've seen the statue.
Yeah, and I'm going to forget his last name. So a friend of mine said, hey, who was a baseball player but retired it by that point, let's go over to Cannon Falls and watch the baseball game. And I said, okay, let's do it. And he's telling me all the way over, there's this guy in the team, his name is Lou, and a guy can hit a ball a mile and la-da-da-da-da. And I'm going, okay, that sounds fine. It's the Dundas Dukes over there playing. And so we get there, and the guy doesn't show up. And so I'm there only because to see this great ball player.
Right.
And and so he doesn't show up. And I thought that's the way it is. Well, about the bottom of the second inning maybe or first inning, he shows up. And he's at bat. And he gets up there. And he puts it in the river. First pitch. Wham! Wow. I didn't even get to see him, hit balls off and, just first pitch, bam, into the river. I think then he went and put his uniform on. I don't know. Maybe the story gets a little bit more fun as the time goes along, but that's the way I remember it. But I just thought, you're 50 years old. I was over in Henderson on Saturday, and I ride with the Rice County Motorcycle Patrol the Sheriff's Department, and I went over to Henderson for their big parade on Saturday.
Sure.
And when I got there, I learned it was on Sunday. So I turned around, and I had seen a baseball field in Union City, I think it's called. And it's a real nice baseball field with lights,
Sure.
Those are expensive.
Yep.
And I thought, I think I'll just ride in there and sit on my bike, have a Coke, and watch a few innings. And this guy comes over and sees this guy dressed like a cop, and wants to know what's the deal. And I said, well, I was in Henderson. I see that there's cars parked here. You got a couple teams out there. They both wore red, by the way.
Yeah.
And I just thought I'd watch some ball. And he said, well, this is over the over 50 group. I wouldn't have known that. There were some guys with beer bellies, a couple. But other than that, with the helmet on and stuff, and they were having a blast. Over 50.
Yeah.
You ever think of getting in on something like that now that you're 50?
Yeah, well, I had. I played competitive baseball until I was 35, and then deployment started happening, and I got pretty banged up overseas. So with the surgeries and the injuries that I have, I don't think baseball's in my future, but I do love to watch games and certainly support the local teams. And I love the fact that we have over 50 leagues.
So now we've got, I'm into softball. We used to have close to 1,000 people, adults, playing softball, slow pitch, in Northfield. And now there's not nearly as many. But tonight, we've got the St. Paul Saints.
Mm-hmm.
We've got the Dundas Dukes. and we have the Knights, the Northfield Knights. And you can go to any one of those games. Which one are you going to choose?
I love the Saints. St. Paul Saints are amazing.
You want some tickets?
Well, the little ones, actually, we've got sports stuff tonight, so I would be able to make tonight.
Okay.
But I would pick the Saints.
Okay.
I always had aspirations of playing pro ball, but I'll tell you, if I'm going to take the family to a game, it's going to be the minor leagues. It's going to be the St. Paul Saints, or it's going to be, you know, teams like that, because there's just so much fun in the stadium, in the crowd, and I'll tell you, CH Field, that's a beautiful field.
Yeah.
So CHS Field.
Well, I have a friend who is a friend of Vec, and he said that he is going to try to get Michael Vec to come down, or Vic, or however you say it,
yeah,
to come down and be on my show.
Okay.
And if this guy, his name is Dan Stoltz, and he's very involved with Minneapolis Aquitennial,
sure,
and he owns a financial company with several locations. And he was very sincere, and I'm glad I'm talking to him, because I have to text him and say, how you doing with my Michael Vec interview?
Yeah.
That'd be
great.
Yeah, because what an interesting son of a very interesting man.
Yes.
Speaking about interesting, we have a couple of things that are interesting we want to tell you about. We'll get back with our interview here on the Wayne Eddy Affair. Brian Bornick is my guest. He is a retired lieutenant colonel and an IT guy for the Veterans Affairs place.
A rewarding career with a successful growing company? Post Consumer Brands, the makers of Malt Meal, Honey Bunches of Oats, and Pebbles, is hiring full-time in Northfield. We're looking for passionate individuals with previous manufacturing experience and a high school degree. We offer competitive wages for production employees starting at $20.63 an hour, and maintenance employees starting at up to $31 an hour, depending on experience. 401k with a generous company match and bonus incentive plans. To view openings and apply for our full-time positions, visit jobs.postconsumerbrands.com/KYMN.
Wenzel Heating and Air Conditioning in Eagan is a customer-focused company that employs highly trained people whose goal is to be the best service company in the 13-county metro area. When you deal with Wenzel HVAC, you can expect a positive working environment, practical advice and suggestions, flexible payment options, cutting-edge technology, headache-free maintenance, a dedication to service, and technical excellence. Serving the South Metro, Wenzel HVAC in Eagan. Call 651-894-9898.
Let's rock me Amadeus.
That was hard.
That was a give me.
Okay, who sings it? Does it? Plays it?
I don't remember.
It's a pretty obvious name. No, it isn't. It's Falco.
Falco.
F-A-L-C-O. Falco and Rock Me Amadeus. 1986. It was the number six song in 1986,
wow,
in all of 86. Yeah, you guys had some fun music. 1029 on 1080 radio, and now 95.1 FM, the one. And the one sitting in the guest seat is a fellow by the name of Brian Bornick, a retired lieutenant colonel in your United States Army. He's from Montello, Wisconsin, and his wife was a commissioned officer in the Army, and he has a sister that is 4 years younger, Mitzi. What's she up to?
Mitzi lives in Berlin, Wisconsin.
Berlin?
Berlin.
Okay.
Which is, it's near Oshkosh, Appleton area, near the Fox River Valley in Wisconsin. My nephew, her youngest, she has two kids, just graduated high school. Her daughter's in college down in Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
So you have good touch with her.
Yeah, absolutely. We were...
the big brother.
A few weekends ago, we got to go to the graduation party, and, you know, it's her husband, Mark, is... he's the chief deputy for the Green Lake County Sheriff's Department in Wisconsin, and he's been doing that as long as I've known him, so he's probably coming on 30 years.
Is that still a political position?
No, the chief deputy is actually the highest non-political position in the sheriff's department.
Okay, because I remember when I was in Tolma, they would run for sheriff, and then the sheriff could fire all the deputies and hire whomever he wanted.
Yeah.
And one of my ex-roommates, who was an engineer and an announcer for WTMB, ended up being a deputy. Okay. And I'm going, what? Hmm. You know, but he knew the sheriff, and they were good friends, and so he gave him a gun and said, you are now a cop. And then, of course, if he loses the election,
right,
you're out of there. I don't know if that still goes on.
Well, I think there's certain, the sheriff, the undersheriff, and I think maybe some of the lieutenants are like appointed positions or elected positions. The sheriff certainly is elected, and then I think he can appoint some. But the patrolman and the chief deputy, those are pretty secure positions. So,
have you ever wanted to be a cop?
Oh, I think every kid goes through a phase where they maybe want to be a police officer or a fireman.
Did the cop ever stop you when you were dragging up and down Montello's main drag?
No. And that's my story. That's my statement. I'm sticking to it.
I always ask these various questions, and that is, do you remember your first bicycle?
I do remember my first bicycle. It was it was a very ugly yellow banana seat with a high sissy bar two-wheel bicycle that my dad manufactured training wheels for, until the point that I could actually learn to ride a two-wheeler, and then I rode that around for a couple of years. And when I turned six, I decided that I'd saved up all my birthday money, and what I really needed was something that was a little cooler as I was riding to Little League practice. So I remember I got a little Huffy dirt bike.
Now, when I asked you that question, your eyes did not light up, and most people's do. And then you said ugly yellow.
Yeah.
But then when you got to the Huffy part, your eyes lit up.
Yeah, because the first bike I had was a hand-me-down, but the second bike I had was my choice.
Well, I like to tell my guests that my first bike, I was so thrilled. My first bike was an army bike.
Oh, really?
A girl's army bike. Oh, boy. But I learned on that. What I'm trying to do here, Brian, is that sometimes I invite people to come back and continue their story.
Sure.
And you have a pretty interesting story from growing up in a small town called Montello with the class of 46 or whatever you said, and going to Stevens Point. What's Stevens Point known for? Like River Falls has a broadcast program.
I think Stevens Point's known for two things. First and foremost, the Point Party. Brewery. Right? I think if you if you're a college student in Stevens Point, you've toured the brewery at least once or twice. Really, the major emphasis academically is paper science. So all the paper mills in Wisconsin and along the river the engineers, the chemists that actually do all of the formulation of paper, Stevens Point's a huge school for that, as well as natural resources, wildlife, fish and game, those kinds of things. So I think that's Stevens Point's theme.
I have a good friend whose father was the head of the wildlife game and all that, whatever the full title is, for the entire state of Wisconsin.
Okay.
The number one guy who was an outstanding athlete that lettered in three sports at the University of Wisconsin.
Okay.
Do you have any idea whom I'm speaking of?
I do not.
Okay. Well, he lettered in football, baseball, and track.
Okay.
And he was the last one to have lettered in three sports at the University of Wisconsin. Nobody does that anymore.
No.
And you don't know who it is.
I don't.
Well, he plays on your favorite, excuse me, he played on your favorite professional football team.
I'll bet you don't know what my favorite professional football team is.
Well, the Minnesota Vikings.
No.
The North Carolina Panthers.
No.
Let's see. Oh, I know. The Giants.
No, but you're in the right state. I just happen to root for the one team that actually plays in New York.
The Jets?
No. The Jets and the Giants play in New Jersey.
Oh.
The Buffalo Bills.
Oh. Oh. Yeah, you grew up during that era where that they went to four Super Bowls, didn't you?
Well, I was, you know, in and out of college at that time, yeah. But I actually, when I started liking them, I was very young, and they had Joe Ferguson was the quarterback, and O.J. Simpson was the running back,
oh.
And their colors were red, white, and blue. So even back when I was a little kid, I think the red, white, and blue really meant something to me. So, but try and pull that one off in the great state of Wisconsin, where everybody and their brother is born into being a Packer fan. Try and be a Buffalo Bills fan there.
Well, wouldn't a Viking fan be even worse?
Yes, yes, absolutely.
Or Chicago?
Yeah. But they
Buffalo
couldn't
Bills
understand.
Off the map. You know, you don't even know who.
I was that anomaly that nobody could understand.
Yeah. But they did a special on who was a great quarterback for them. And they went to like four Super Bowls in a row and lost.
Jim
like,
Kelly.
Yes. What a guy he was and is and is a fighter.
He is.
And you know, became the Buffalo Bills became the doormat laughing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, hey, they make it all the way to the Super Bowl, and then they get dissed. Mm-hmm. I mean, how about those teams that were 12-3 or
right.
whatever? Excuse me, 3-12.
Right.
But 3-13. But I know because I bleed purple, and I've been to all of the Viking Super Bowls. Is that the game? And I was at the last Super Bowl that the Buffalo Bills were in, and they lost.
Yeah.
You know where that was?
Where it was?
Yeah.
Well, I know who they played.
Who'd they play?
Dallas Cowboys.
No.
That's the last one they lost.
Oh, I thought it was Washington.
No, that was the second one they lost.
Oh.
So they lost the first one. That was here in Minneapolis, and
yes.
that was in 1991.
Yes.
In fact, that year, I was down in Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri with the Army going through training. And, of course, Desert Shield, Desert Storm happened, you know, during that time period. So I was kind of occupied. But I remember the NCAA Final Four was here that March. Prior to that, the January Super Bowl was here. And prior to that, the Twins were in the World Series
yeah.
in the fall. So that was a busy time of year, you know. That was a busy start to the decade of the 90s for Minnesota.
So what was it like growing up in Wisconsin and wearing the Bills colors? I mean, did you must have got a lot of teasing.
I did. But I think, you know, it was, I don't know, maybe training for all that leadership stuff where you could stand on your own, you know, have your own opinion. It was interesting, right? I'd never really minded standing out on my own.
But they weren't on television that much.
No, I didn't get really to see him. So back then, Topps trading cards were really big, and so I kind of followed the team through collecting football cards from Topps and chewing all that awful bubble gum in the package.
That's one thing I never did, and you know, you always see on Pawn Star or American Pickers or shows like that where they run across our Antique Roadshow,
mm-hmm.
where they run across a card. And, you know, I think when I was a kid, we had them, but I really wasn't into them that much. I think the only one I can remember is Joe DiMaggio.
Mm.
And the reason is Joe DiMaggio had a brother that also played professional baseball, and I think he married somebody from Little Canada.
Okay.
And there was some kind of connection because I remember this guy with the dark hair was, you know, everybody was saying, ooh, ooh, but it wasn't Joe, it was his brother. It's 21 minutes before 11 o'clock on the Wayne Eddy Affair. We are talking to Brian Bornick, and he is a retired lieutenant colonel, and he works as an IT guy for the VA. Let's talk more about your college experience. And you got away from home, from Montello. At home, you were a hardworking kid,
mm-hmm.
a decent guy, a leader in high school, making good money and working for the county based on nepotism and performance. And what was your first car that you owned?
The very first car I owned was a 1970 Chevy Nova SS. It's probably the only car in my life that I wish I never would have sold.
Oh, well, everybody that I talk to, virtually, I should say, everybody, says, they say the same thing, number one, because that was their cool first car,
yeah.
And number two, it might be a pretty valuable car right. today.
Yeah.
Now, you ever go up to the State Fair for Back to the 50s?
Yes, I have been there.
Okay, well, I'm old enough to have my first car up there. Yours can't be there.
Not yet.
Okay. Well, yeah. But my very first car was a 38 Ford.
Okay.
Two-door sedan. Brightly painted, brand new black. Oh, anyhow, I talk about it too much. So what the heck was an SS?
It was the sport edition of the Chevy Nova. It was kind of a muscle car.
But just a
cheaper muscle car. It didn't carry the same status as like maybe the GTOs or the Mustang fastbacks or anything of that nature. But it was kind of the in between. It wasn't a cruiser. It had the big engine. It had the V8. Usually had more racing type tires. Certainly didn't lack horsepower. So
what year was it?
1970.
1970, and this would have been about 84 or 5 when you got it?
84, correct.
Okay.
So 14 years old.
Okay.
It was I watched it as a kid drive by my street because the owner of the car worked with my dad. And so to get to work, he'd have to drive by. And so every morning as I was leaving for school, I'd see him drive by.
What color was it?
Well, when I bought it, it was gold. But
okay.
I painted it blue.
You wish you'd have kept it gold?
I do.
Yeah. I wanted to paint one of my cars a different color, and the guy said, you don't want to do that, Wayne. Just leave it original.
Yeah.
Repaint it if it needs it, but don't, change it. So I didn't, and I'm happy. So did this have, a dual exhaust on it? Was it a rumbling muffler?
Well, I think it was single exhaust, but it was rumbling. It had a nice purr to it.
Okay. Was the dad, the person that drove that the same age as your dad?
No, he was. My parents actually waited to have kids. So even though I was the oldest, they'd been married for a while. And so my parents fell into kind of the. They weren't quite as old as my friend's grandparents, but they were older than my friend's parents. And so this guy was probably about 15 years younger than my dad.
Okay. And that he'd go. Now, how did you end up getting it?
Well, he had had it. He bought it new, and he had it for 14 years. And he really liked the new Camaros that had come out. And so he decided that he was going to buy a new car, and he put it up for sale. And so by this time, I had been working for, the better part of 4 years, saving money. Prior to it, the only thing I really bought were a couple of bikes. I bought that Huffy dirt bike and then a 10-speed later when they became popular. And so I just saved all the money. And so, my dad knew that I really wanted the car. He came home one day and he said, hey, you put it up for sale. And I scraped together enough money and got a small loan from my dad to pay what I didn't have and paid that back.
How much was the car?
$2,500.
Well, that was a pretty good sum.
Yeah.
How much were you making an hour?
Well, I got most of the time at that age, right? I was working on the farms and I got paid by the bale, so I got 6 cents a bale.
I got 6 cents a bale and I made $600.
Yeah.
Figure that one out. It's 16 minutes before 11 o'clock on KYMN Radio, and we will be back in just a moment.
Residential or commercial, Cannon Valley Water in Dundas is the place to call for water. Whether it's a complete water conditioning system or just salt delivery and filters, Cannon Valley Water can take care of it. And Cannon Valley Water can also deliver Candy Yohai premium water right to your house or business at great rates, too. Chippewa Springs is as pure today as it was when we first tested it over a century ago, and is proudly distributed by Cannon Valley Water. Pickups are now located at 609 Stafford Lane in Dundas, just behind Aldi. Call Cannon Valley for your water today.
Hi, I'm April Kopak, manager at Three Links Apartments in Northfield. We are an active, independent community of older adults and disabled individuals. Our spacious one-bedroom apartments feature controlled key access, off-street parking, and are handicap accessible. This is a place to call home, make new friends, and participate in many activities and exercises. Tours are welcome. Please call Three Links Apartments at 664-8850 or find out more at threelinks.org.
I think this song was played at every high school dance that we had, but I have no idea.
It is called Kyrie.
Kyrie.
By
Mr.
Not Mr. Rogers.
No.
Mr. M-R period M-I-S-T-E-R. Isn't that cute? The electronics in the satellite. We're playing music from 1986. This happened to be the number 7 song in all of 1986, the year my guest graduated from high school in a place called Montello, Wisconsin, which isn't very far from the Dells. How far off of 90? Was it 90 that was down in the Dells or 94?
94 goes past the Dells. Let's see. Well, the Dells is actually right off of 94, so you probably maybe 2 miles off of the interstate, you're in downtown Wisconsin Dells.
Okay, how about Montello?
Interstate 39, which used to be Highway 51 back then, is really what kind of runs close to Montello. So the interstate, you're probably, the closest point from Montello is probably Mauston, so you're probably about 35, 40 miles from the interstate, Montello.
Well, you say Mauston.
Mauston,
right?
Yeah.
Which is next, if you're going east, is the next city after Tolma.
Tolma.
And WTMB is the radio station I first started at in 1964. W, because it has to be a W or a K, depending on what side of the river you're at. TMB, Tolma, Mauston Broadcasting.
There you go.
Isn't that cute?
It is.
Yeah. My wife and I were going through there, and to this day, I want to smack myself. And I was looking for the radio station, 1460 on the dial.
Yeah.
And the guy was doing a remote broadcast from someplace. And I'm listening, because that's where I got my start all these years ago. And I'm listening to the guy, and, of course, he wants people to come and participate in whatever the activity was. And I thought, well, you know, I should try to find that place and just stop in and say, hey, I heard you on the radio, and maybe buy something.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I'm thinking all this in my head as we are going down the avenue of wherever we were. There he was.
Yeah.
There was a sign, WTMB. And my wife was driving, and I thought, well, she wouldn't, you know, want to do that. And to this day, I kick myself because I know the guy would have got a big kick out of it.
Sure.
And, you know, come up, hi, how are you? And I said, well, I was listening to a radio show and all that. Well, where are you from? I'm from Northfield, Minnesota. Really? Eventually work into, well, I used to work here at WTMB.
Yeah.
How long ago? It was about 48 years ago. 11 before 11 on the Wayne Eddy Affair. Brian Bornick is my guest on KYMN. Brian is a retired lieutenant colonel from your United States Army, and he is now working as a IT guy for the Veterans Affairs Commission. He's married to a woman that is also a retired officer from the Army. And he has a whole bunch of different kids, and I'm going to start naming them now. Let's see. We got Mitzi, who's your sister. She's 4 years younger.
Correct.
Okay, now you have children all the way from 24 to 1.
1. Yep, that's correct.
Okay, let's start with the – and remember, I don't want to get personal. If not, I assume that you may have had more than one marriage.
I do. I'm on my second marriage.
Okay, so am I.
So
it's 29 years old, though.
It's a theme with me. It's a story of two lives.
Okay. The oldest is a son?
The oldest is a daughter.
A daughter. Okay.
Yeah.
And her name is?
Her name is Kylie.
How did you come up with Kylie back all those years ago?
Well, sleep deprivation. So the story goes, we were poring over for probably 2 months prior to the birth, poring over baby names, books all over the place. My then wife, you know, we were really trying to find a name that we both liked, which was more difficult than either of us had probably imagined up until that point. And it was, we were actually in the hospital going through the delivery, And I was paging through books because we still hadn't decided on one. And she was exhausted, obviously. I was exhausted. And we came across this name that was actually Kaylee. But because I was so tired, I said Kylie. And then I realized my mistake, and I went back and said, oh, no, wait, that's Kaylee. But then we both said, hey, Kylie sounds pretty cool. So that's the name we agreed on.
And how did you have it spelled?
K-Y-L-E-E.
Of course. Why did I know that? Kentucky Lee.
Yeah.
You ever look at that?
Yeah.
K-Y-L-E-E. Okay, I spelled it K-I-L-E-Y.
Yeah.
Okay. Kylie's 24.
Kylie's 24.
And then you have another
then,
one.
Then 2 years later, we had another daughter. Her name is Kendra.
Okay, that's from the doll?
Well, no, actually, in college, I majored in communications. And one of the communications professors that I had a daughter that was also in my class, same age. And her name was Kendra, and I had never heard that name prior to that. And really kind of liked it. And I mentioned it offhand. My wife and I actually met in college, so we were both there.
At Stevens Point.
At Stevens Point.
Okay.
And so I mentioned it to my wife at that time. And, you know, years went by. We had Kylie, obviously named the Kylie. And when we found out that we were going to have a daughter, you know, she kind of brought that name up. And I had always liked it, and it was unique. And
she wasn't an ex-girlfriend.
No, she was not an ex-girlfriend.
The professor's daughter.
No.
Okay.
Although, that wouldn't have been a bad thing.
Oh, how personal we get.
No, she was not.
So how old is Kendra?
Kendra just turned 22 yesterday.
Okay. Yesterday. Well, happy birthday, Kendra.
Yes.
Belatedly. Okay. Do you have any more children with your first wife?
One more.
Okay.
So I have a 17-year-old son. His name is Logan.
I like that name.
And actually, you had about a month ago, you had Logan on the radio. He was one of the captains for the high school lacrosse team, and you had the captains here.
Oh, I didn't. Dusty
Budd. Oh, Dustin, yeah. KYMN did.
Yeah, Dusty Budd.
Yeah.
Yeah, he does a nice job. All right, so Kylie, Kendra, and Logan,
yes,
with your first wife, who was from...
She graduated from Apple Valley, Minnesota.
Really?
But went to
Stevens Point
for college.
Okay, and what was she thinking about that in regards to... Was she going to make toilet paper?
No. No, she actually went for psychology.
Okay.
So,
by the way, when you were in that communications class, what were they talking about? Communicating by way of marketing or broadcasting?
Yeah, so I had two emphasis. Organizational communication, so where you actually work for corporations, and internal and external communication. How managers communicate with their staffs, those kinds of principles. And then my second emphasis was radio and TV broadcasting. So I got to play with the mixer and the character generator and do a lot of things on the radio and the TV side of things. That was a lot of fun.
Well, you lost me on character generator, but today's operation of the board is so much easier.
Very different.
Back when I was, you know, I was just talking the other day with Jeff Johnson. Two reel-to-reels, three cart machines, one cassette machine, and three turntables. And no, you know, you did it all yourself.
Sure.
And talked at the same time. But here, all I have to do is take a mouse and an arrow and...
Leo South in Lakeville is not your typical power sports company. It's family-owned and run, meaning you actually get to talk to the owners. What's even more impressive is they have 25-plus employees, and they all work every hour they're open. So you don't have to stand in long lines waiting for help. Plus, get faster and more coordinated service. And getting parts? Well, there's so much experience behind the parts counter, you'll be amazed. Our motto is, we sell fun. But every day, our mission is to help you from finding parts, getting service, or shopping for something new. And fun, too. Visit leosouth.com to tempt yourself.
Quality is assured when you deal with Mike at Fox Landscaping. See what a difference new landscaping can do for you. Call Mike Fox at 645-9091 about professional landscape consultation. Fox Landscaping in Northfield.
Well, this surprises me. The number one song in 1986... And I was playing her music in the 60s.
that that? Something about friends. That's what that's what friends will be.
That's what friends are.
Are for. Right. That's what friends are for.
But who sang it? I should ever go away. It's a Dionne Warwick and Friends.
Okay.
You know,
I know who Dionne Warwick is.
She had a song, a very popular song that I played in Tomo, Wisconsin. And each morning I wake up before I put on my makeup, I say a little prayer for you. Remember that?
I don't.
You don't, but that was a great song. And I always have a little story. They send out a request to send in your name and your call letters to Dionne because she would like to do a promo for you.
Oh.
Hi, this is Dionne Warwick. When I'm in Tomo, Wisconsin, I listen to the Wayne Eddy Affair, except she said Tomat.
Yeah.
Because I hand wrote it and my H looked like a T.
Sure.
When I'm in Tomat, 3 minutes before 11 o'clock on the Wayne Eddy Affair, my guest this morning is Brian Bornick. And Brian is from Montello, Wisconsin, and a Buffalo Bills fan. We talked about his first family, and they're all equal, and a daughter, 24, Kylie, and a daughter, 22, just had a birthday yesterday, Kendra, and Logan is 17. Now, Logan, evidently your ex-wife lives in Northfield?
She does.
And then Logan, equal time?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is that work? I mean, don't tell me if you don't want to, but it means for... I was divorced and I had a child, and kids will play one parent against the other.
Sure.
You know, so I imagine it takes a little bit of understanding.
It does, and you know, I mean, blended families have challenges any other family does, and so sometimes that happens. But I think the fact that my ex-wife and I, the one thing that we typically agreed on what was good for our kids. And so there wasn't really a lot of opportunity. I think the kids thought that they might get away with a lot more because mom and dad didn't talk as much as we do. But, it hasn't been too hard. It's been a little bit of interesting at times living in even though Northfield's 20,000 people, it doesn't feel like 20,000 people. And, you bump into each other. You live in the same community. And so
I know what you mean.
Just better to get along.
And by the way, there's 20,007.
Yeah, okay.
What is your family with your current wife?
So Michelle,
My Bell.
Yeah, and actually she owns her own photography business, and it's called Michelle My Bell Photography.
Really?
It really is.
Did I sing the song to her that I...
No.
I sang to Michelle's.
You'll have to do that next time.
I'll do it for you after we get off the air.
Okay. So Michelle and I, we met at Fort Bragg in 2008, so 10 years ago. Together we have a 5-year-old boy, Henry.
Okay, Henry is your and Michelle's child.
That's correct. He's our first.
Oh, that's her first. Okay.
Yeah, she. So Michelle, she grew up. Her parents came from large families. Her grandfather is still alive. He's 94, and on her dad's side, and they had 15 children.
Wow.
So
maybe she should be a guest on my show. Well, I'm going to hurry
wrap
you
up
here because. Okay, so you have a 5-year-old named Henry, and then you have twins that are one.
We have a 3-year-old named Reagan.
Right. Oh, man.
So she's...
Is that after Ronnie?
Yes, it is.
Oh, good.
Okay. Yes, it is.
Oh, whoops. Okay.